Welcome to the Fantastic Four, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. This is the podcast that combines comics, cocktails, and conversation for your listening pleasure. I am your host, Brett Young. And joining me in the lounge this time is a rising newcomer to the podcast world, Mr. John Stibe. John, welcome to the Fantastic Lounge. How are you doing?
I am doing great. It's Saturday night, and there's no place I'd rather be than in the Fantastic Lounge. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course, we're happy to have you. So now this is what, your third? This is your third podcast, is that right?
Yep.
You've toured with Shag and Paul over at DC Special Cast and stuff, yeah?
Yeah, I actually recorded with Paul first on the Super Gorilla one, and then I recorded Shag on the JSA Presents show. So I'm a huge fan of the network. I've been listening for years. And just to actually have the opportunity to talk in person to you guys is just, it's a treat. So thank you.
Well, that's great. We're happy to have you here in the lounge. So John, before we get started, I'm trying something a little new now. So I always talk about the Patreon and everything at the end of this podcast. So I'm going to kind of shove that to the front, you know, to kind of hang out the shingle right away. So before we get started, if you like the show and many others on the Fire and Water Podcast Network, consider supporting our efforts and become a Patreon at patreon.com/FW podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, including being name checked on the show of your choice. Thanks to Sean Ross and Jay Campbell for choosing the Fantastic Four. Now, John, if you were to bestow a kind of a frivolous superpower on Sean and Jay, what would that be?
Well, I didn't really have time to give it a lot of thought, and I don't know how.
nor should you.
but I am a fan of the Legion of Substitute Heroes. I really liked your last episode when you did the 5YL.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that Sean could get a combination of the powers from Color Kid and Chlorophyll Kid. Now, he could make plants grow, but he could change their color, but just plants.
I'm going to interrupt you real quick. I instantly have a great use for that Sean can use. Anytime he's getting roses for his wife, he can go get the cheap ones, the cheapest one, the white ones or the pink ones or the yellow ones or whatever. Bring them home. Boom. Turns them red. Yeah. Red roses. There you go. So,
I told you there was nothing frivolous about that. Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead. What about Jack?
That's functional.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm really going to have to swing for the fences. As for Jay, I'm going to sort of combine Infectious Lass with Stone Boy, and I'm going to give him the ability to make rocks and boulders sick. I don't really know what that means, but sorry, that's the best I could do.
I'm not. I honestly can't think of a purpose for that, but still, that's great. There you go, Jay. Sean, I hope you guys enjoyed that. Thank you, John. That's very good. It's very good. So, okay, well, let's get on with the show. Sometime ahead of recording each podcast, I ask my guests two things. Choose an alcohol, beverage, or ingredient that they enjoy, and choose a comic book character that they love. Now, based on the answers, I come up with a cocktail for us to create and choose a comic book to discuss. Now, John, please tell all our friends in the lounge your chosen ingredient and comic book character. Let's start with your character.
Oh, there are so many characters that I love, and there are so many characters that I'd love to talk about. But once I looked at my list, I really thought a perfect one would be the Beast, Hank McCoy.
Nice.
As he would say, "Oh my stars and garters." And probably knew I was going to start with that, right?
Yes.
Okay, so why did I pick the Beast? How much time do we have? I started reading superhero comics in the mid-1970s. At that point, Mrs. McCoy's bouncing, literally, baby boy was blue and furry and so much fun. I loved his look, especially as depicted by George Perez. Mm-hmm. I loved his sense of humor. His dialogue contained so many big words, but also jokes. He was and is one of my all-time favorite characters. And I didn't even know his backstory at that point. I think my first issue of Avengers was 156. Once I found out that Hank was furry because of his own experimentation on himself, I learned about his original simian appearance going all the way back to X-Men number one. I love that look too. In fact, I'm wearing it on my shirt right now, pointing on an audio podcast.
Yeah, everybody at the lounge can see it. That's what's important. There you go.
It's hard to explain, but in my early reading days, I read new comics and lots of Marvel reprints simultaneously. My first X-Men comic was 103, where they were already all new and all different. Then I received and still have my beloved Origin of Marvel Comics and Son of Origins in the box slipcase. So I was able to read X-Men number one. And then I bought Amazing Adventures and read those very early Lee and Kirby issues in order for the first year or two. This was the case for a lot of Marvel characters for me. I was reading two eras of each character, the contemporary one and the original run at the same time. Marvel Tales, Marvel Triple Action, Marvel's Greatest Comics. It was so cool to read them like that. Getting back to the Beast. I liked Monkey Beast as I thought of him, but I didn't call him that because he had those big feet and he used them almost as much as he used his hands. I loved his even bigger vocabulary from back then. I was the type of kid who would, if I didn't know a word in a comic, I looked it up in a dictionary. And I tell people that because I'm a school teacher. And it was if Spider-Man said a word that I didn't know, it was important enough for me to look it up. And it really shaped how I grew as a reader. So it made perfect sense to me that the Beast would try to cure himself and then end up worse. But was he worse? The blue furry version was easily more fun, more relatable, less tragic, more popular with females, and definitely more laughs. So many great visuals, as we'll see in this issue. I also loved his relationship with Wonder Man at the time. I had no idea who Wonder Man was or why he died and how he was back, but they played off each other so well that I would compare them to later favorite duos such as Blue Beetle and Booster Gold. So was the Beast my favorite X-Man? Not really. That was Nightcrawler. But was the Beast my favorite Avenger? Absolutely. I will probably elaborate even more in this episode about some of the missteps that were taken with the character later. There were many, in my opinion, and I don't necessarily recognize Hank literally and figuratively in current comics, which makes me a little sad, but I'll always have the back issues and, more importantly, my memories of the Beast.
That is definitely why you chose the Beast. Absolutely, John. That was great. Yeah, and I do want to get into a little bit about what has gone on with him currently, but I can say much better myself. So I'll wait till we kind of get into the comic and everything. So anyway, real quick, the Beast, real name, Henry Phillip Hank McCoy. First appearance was X-Men issue one in July of 1963 from Marvel Comics. He was created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. So we'll get back to the Beast soon. But in the meantime, John, why don't you tell us your ingredient of choice?
My ingredient of choice was vodka. I picked vodka because, ironically enough, I'm a Bloody Mary fan. I've always enjoyed the combination of flavors in a Bloody Mary. And if I'm being honest, I love all the extra stuff that they stick in there, like beef sticks and olives and more that are added. It was my regular drink, but I say was because I'm currently not drinking alcohol. I made that choice last fall mostly to see if I could do it. And I'm happy to report that I'm doing okay without it most days. I will
Good for
have the
you.
occasional NA beer or mocktail now, so I'm happy that you have a drink plan that can be a mocktail, because if we did it with a Bloody Mary, I'd just be drinking tomato juice.
And we kind of talked about this a little behind the scenes. We talked about doing a Bloody Mary episode, and we may still in the future because I really like Bloody Marys. And that is something, again, with all the additives and all the cool things you can add to them. I mean, there's nothing more fun than when I had time to do this, but you go to a brunch and they have like a Bloody Mary bar, and if they have a good, good setup and stuff like that. I used to go to a place in Dewey Beach called the Starboard, and they used to have, if anybody else remembers the Starboard in Dewey Beach in Delaware, please chime in right in. They would do this huge Bloody Mary bar that had everything you could imagine, and it was, oh God, it was so good. It was so much fun. But anyway, we thought about doing that. One of the reasons it's not is because we're recording late at night, and not late at night, but in the evening, and it's kind of hard to drink a Bloody Mary when it's 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. So instead, we decided to do something a little different with vodka. Basically, we're going to be creating a cocktail with vodka and then a mocktail version as well. But before we go over our recipe, let's talk a little bit more about blue cocktails, like our Bouncing Blue Beast here, in a segment I like to call Secret Porridgeons. Now, John, you're a little newer to the network. Do you get it? Do you see what I did there?
I've been listening to Fantastic Four since the very first episode, and
Right.
just now I finally got it. So
Oh,
thank
thank
you.
you. All right. Thank you very much. Okay. So here is the origin of the blue cocktail. Thank you, eater.com and tastingtable.com for research and quotes. According to Jacob Briers, the global brand ambassador for Bacardi, blue drinks were first in fashion in the mid-19th century in Victorian England. Artificial colors, particularly royal purple, extended from clothing to food. Blue was created out of coal tar, Bryans explains, not particularly pleasant and not good for you. The French had perfected the art of the cordial, like secret formulas for Benedictine and Cointreau. So the Dutch decided to create base flavors like crème de banana, crème de menthe, and crème de ciel, or blue curacao, which was made with oranges from the then Dutch-owned Caribbean island of Curacao. By the 1890s, these colorful liquors had made their way to America, becoming a full-fledged craze on both sides of the Atlantic. As with many liquors, Prohibition from 1920 to 1933 in the US made access to most liquors hard to get. However, Europe had no such restrictions. Jacob Breyer mentions a Brisbane newspaper article which noted that blue drinks were, quote, all the rage in Europe, unquote. Breyer said it was so common that people casually remarked on them as if they were a trend. No one wrote down the recipes. Back in the US, blue drinks were mostly forgettable until after World War II when the Polynesian drink craze hit. The early tiki cocktails weren't blue until a rep for Bowls asked some bartenders in Hawaii to create some drinks using blue curacao. Legendary bartender Harry Yee at the Hilton Hawaiian Village in Waikiki created the famous Blue Hawaii, similar to the blue pina colada, basically. Its popularity grew even more after the 1961's film Blue Hawaii, starring Elvis Presley. For the most part these days, blue drinks are associated with gimmicky vacation cocktails. The new century has seen such drinks pushed aside for more gin and bourbon-based mixology, but I think there's always a place for something blue. So, John, it's happy hour, so let's make a drink. I call this the Blue Beast. So, John, why don't you tell our friends what we need? So, this is a little different because we're going to have, for everyone in the lounge, we're going to have basically three recipes we're going over. The first is going to be a simple syrup that we use in both the cocktail and mocktail. The second one will be the cocktail recipe. And then the third one will be the mocktail recipe. John, why don't you do the Blue Beast syrup? Then I'll do the cocktail recipe. And then you can come back for the mocktail recipe. How about that?
Sounds great.
All right, go ahead.
I actually made the blue bee syrup just a few hours ago, and I will tell you it came out pretty good and it's pretty delicious. You start with 2 cups of water in a pot and you heat on low and you stir in 1 cup of sugar. Then squeeze one lemon and one orange into the pot and continue to stir. Once you have it mixed up, you remove it from the heat and let it cool. Add 3 drops of blue food coloring, not four, not two, 3 drops worked out just perfectly, and stir, and then place it in a cup and set it aside.
Once you've done that, and again, even if you make it right before the drink, as long as you set it aside and as long as it's fairly cool, you're fine. You don't have to wait too long to use it. So here's for the Blue Beast cocktail. You're going to use 1.5 ounces of vodka, 1/2 ounce of triple sec. Now you may be wondering, Brett, why don't you use blue curacao instead of triple sec? Well, that wouldn't be any fun for the mocktail because we still want to make sure it's blue. So that's why I went with triple sec and we made this special Blue Beast syrup. Anyway, 1.5 ounces of vodka, 1/2 ounce of triple sec, 1 ounce of the Blue Beast syrup, 1 ounce of fresh lemon juice, 2 sprigs of mint, seltzer, or Sprite. But then the instructions is how you're going to make it. You add the mint sprig and the lemon juice to the shaker, muddle it gently. Add vodka, triple sec, and the Blue Beast syrup and some ice to the shaker. Shake and strain into a Collins glass filled with ice. Top that with either seltzer or Sprite, garnish with a mint. Now, John, what about the mocktail recipe?
So the mocktail ingredients are pretty similar, just leaving out the alcohol. So it was 1 ounce of blue bee syrup and 1 ounce of fresh lemon juice. And I actually put those together and then shook them up. And then you still need the mint, and then you add, put it over the ice, and then you also need either seltzer or Sprite for that one too.
Okay, very good. These both turn out really well. They both have a nice bluish hue to them. John's turned out perfect. His mocktail perfect. I'll definitely add one of those photos to the image gallery because it turned out great, John. You did a great job with it. So John and I are going to enjoy our Blue Beast as he lists how many different Wisconsin cheeses there are. Now everyone in the lounge is welcome to drink along and listen to this promo break.
Hey, Who's Who, the definitive podcast of the DC Universe.
Spanning from the first issue of Who's Who in 1985 all the way through the Loose Leaf Edition.
Including all the updates, the spinoffs, custom Who's Who pages for forgotten characters, and tons of in-depth character spotlights.
Entries span from the golden age of DC
and into the extreme 1990s.
Covering characters such as Superman by Kurt Swan and John Byrne.
The Justice League by Kevin Maguire.
Batman by Dick Giordano.
The New Titans by Tom Grummett.
Wonder Woman by George Perez.
The Legion of Superheroes by Keith Giffen.
The Flash by Carmine Infantino.
Lobo by Simon Bisley.
The All-Star Squadron by Jerry Ordway.
Firestorm by Al Milgram.
Aquaman by Chuck Patton.
So many entries talking about Ian Carcool.
The Forever People again and again and again.
And hundreds of other characters found in Who's Who, the definitive podcast of the DC Universe.
Available wherever you find podcasts and at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Nuclear Man, Batman, Hawkman,
2D Man, and Hour Man. Who are all these people, man?
They're all part of the DC Who's Who.
And we're back. That's an alarming amount of cheese. Now that we've had a chance to taste our Blue Beast, John, what do you think of it?
I think it goes really well with cheese, actually. I think it's really good. As far as mocktails go, in some cases, it's just easier to have like lemonade or soda or something like that. But this is actually like really fun. I'm not a necessarily like a fruity drink person, but it's not like that either. I'm getting lemon and I'm getting the orange from that. I have to, full disclosure, say we didn't have any mint. So I did send you a picture of a glass without the green stuff in it, and the one with the green stuff was parsley, because I wanted
it. But I didn't even notice. I looked at it too quickly. I thought it was just small.
My wife was like, don't send me a picture of the one with parsley in it. And I'm like, but it looks like mint if you don't zoom in on it.
But
in terms of the drink, I honestly say I've had like three of them, because it's just the soda I was using is zero sugar, which is good because they're in, but it's got a really nice, I mean, right now it was 80 some degrees today here in southeastern Wisconsin.
Oh,
it was
beautiful,
cutting the grass and all that. So this is a perfect drink for a day like today. I liked it a lot.
Well, very good. Very good. I'm glad to hear that. John's kind of taking it from the mocktail side. I'll take it from the cocktail side. I said I used seltzer instead of Sprite because there's enough sweetness in the Blue Beast syrup. Now, the lemon juice counteracts that a little bit and kind of evens it out. So it's not like you're tasting too sweet, but I don't like drinks very sweet. So I decided to forego Sprite and I went with seltzer to just kind of keep it clean and bright that way. But yeah, it goes down easy. It goes down smooth. So summer's just about here. It's a great drink for summertime. And making the Blue Beast syrup, like you said, is something just kind of fun to do. I mean, this is kind of the whole point of this. You know, like you said, a mocktail could literally, you could just make an Arnold Palmer or something like that. But where's the fun in that? You know, they're good sometimes, but we wanted to be a little more creative and add something, add some color, add some hue, things like that, and add some different flavor points. It's a lot of fun. It's not that hard to make. Like you said, you can make a bunch of the Blue Beast syrup. It's two waters to one sugar. You could do as much or as little as you want, basically. And it keeps, stick it in the fridge, you know, just make them when you want to. It's just something fun. And literally it's something you could make for the kids too. It's not, you know, there's nothing alcoholic in it. So yeah, I was really happy with the way this turned out. It was a lot of fun. I took some pictures of my drinks earlier that I sent to John as well, and I'll add those to the gallery. But this was a fun cocktail and a fun mocktail to make. Now, did your wife enjoy it as well, or did she have one? I always ask this whenever. I always ask, you know, did you make one for your wife, or was she interested in that, or was she not? She's just like, I don't have time for this nonsense.
And she tasted it, and she's not big on like sweet stuff. I do have an almost 8-year-old who was getting ready for bed, and she asked if she could try it. And I said, yeah. And she's like, that was really tasty. Can I have some more? And I'm like, no, you're getting ready for bed.
Still
a pretty good cup of granulated sugar in that syrup. So,
yeah,
but she liked it too. I definitely see myself finishing the stuff that's in the fridge, because it's an ounce that once you make a batch, it's only an ounce that goes in the drink. So it was really tasty. Really
perfect. Well, that's good to hear. Well, hopefully she got to have the parsley afterwards or something like that.
I took it out by that point.
All right. Well, listen, while we enjoy our Blue Beast in the Fantastic Lounge, how about some fine literature? The comic we will be discussing that involves the Beast is Avengers, Volume 1, Issue 167, publisher Marvel Comics. Cover date was January 1978. On sale date, October 18th, 1977. Cover price, 35 cents. Those were the days. Title is Tomorrow Dies Today. I keep wanting to say Tomorrow Never Dies because of the James Bond movie. But Tomorrow Dies Today, it's called. Writer, Jim Shooter. Penciler, George Perez. Inker, Pablo Marcos. Colorist, Phil Rachelson. Letterer, Joe Rosen. And editor is Archie Goodwin. Thank you, Mike's Amazing World of Comics, for that information. So, John, would you like to tell our friends in the Fantastic Lounge what this story is all about?
Yeah, when you and I first started talking back and forth, and I finally selected Beast as my character, and then you're like, I'm thinking of some issues to send you, and I didn't even suggest this issue. This is literally one of my favorite comics from when I was a kid, and I paid 35 cents for it, and I love this issue. And that was when you're like 167, and I'm like, is that the one with the splash page? And we'll talk about that in a minute. Just a fantastic issue, just a great time to be reading the Avengers. It's one of my favorite spots. So here's what happens in the story, and I'm sure we will add to this. The Avengers are alerted by Nick Fury, chomping his cigar, agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., about a gigantic space station that materialized in Earth orbit directly next to S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters. Nick's worried, and so the Avengers suit up and infiltrate the giant space station. After splitting up, Beast has to go solo because he's in a really small, confined area, and he encounters two occupants from the space station, and a melee ensues. Soon, Thor interrupts the fight and informs Beast that the alien occupants are the heroic Guardians of the Galaxy, not the movie ones, but really good characters. The Guardians of the Galaxy, whom both Thor and Captain America have already met. The Guardians have time traveled from the 31st century in pursuit of the cyborg Korvac, who plans to alter history by killing Vance Astro during his 20th century boyhood. Meanwhile, back on Earth, Janet Pym is hosting the first show of her fashion designs when the Porcupine, who has no fashion sense, and his men attempt a robbery, only to be defeated by the Wasp, Yellowjacket, and Nighthawk from the Defenders, who had been in attendance in his secret identity as Kyle Richmond. That's what I loved about this era as a comic fan. These characters just lived in the same universe and would just show up. He wasn't on the cover. It wasn't. And it made me a Nighthawk fan. It made me want to read the Defenders. In the confusion, however, one of the models, Karina Walters, is approached by a mysterious man from the audience, and they both instantaneously vanish. And that's the end of the issue.
Well, let's just dive right in. What'd you think of this cover? Because we have to talk about this cover.
So I cannot say enough stuff about George Perez. My two favorite artists of all time are George Perez and John Byrne. And I got to talk about John Byrne with Shag, and the fact that I get to talk about George Perez with you. And I got a chance to meet George Perez at a couple of conventions.
Oh, nice.
Conventions in Chicago. The sweetest guy on earth and just so fun. The cover is amazing. I'm looking at it digitally because unfortunately I don't have access to my print comics right now. Or I can, but I don't actually know which box it's in. And I see 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 13, at least 13 people just on the cover. And that's with me counting it on the fly. I see the Beast come flying in. He's punching the Guardians. I had no idea who any of these people were as far as the Guardians. I became fans of them because of this, because they all are different colors and shapes, and the Nikki's head is on fire, and Charlie 27 is huge. And just even the behold ... the Guardians of the Galaxy let me know I was getting my 35 cents worth. What did you think of the cover?
Oh, it lives rent free in my head. I still remember, like you, I remember being a kid seeing this. Just for those at home, basically you have the Avengers title at the top, and the corner box is the Vision. It's not a floating head this time. It's actually the Vision's body And they have him materializing basically kind of through the corner box, which is just awesome. That's one of my favorites. You have the title, Behold the Guardians of the Galaxy, in a big red box right below the Avengers title. And then, you know, you just have everything there. It's an image from inside the Guardians giant satellite that we'll get to. We talk about this. You have on the left-hand side, you basically cascading down the staircase, you have the Guardians, except Charlie 27, the big guys in the front, and you have the Beast giving him the old flying double fisted punch. And if you look in the background, he leapt, because you can see, because the speed lines are the same color, as they're like a violet speed line. He leapt from something that looks like it's about maybe a mile in the background.
It does.
So it looks like he leapt all the way
to velocity for that punch.
Yeah, he got some serious speed behind that punch. And then on the right side, you have all the Avengers. You have Thor, Iron Man, Vision, Scarlet Witch, Captain America, and Wonder Man all running towards the Beast like, oh my gosh, what's going on here? They don't look angry. They look more like troubled. Like, oh my gosh, what's happening here? So it's kind of perfectly split in half. You have the Guardians on the left, you have the Avengers on the right, and right in the middle, splitting in half, you have the Beast and Charlie 27, right? Charlie 27, yep. I think it's 27. Right in the middle, kind of up front, socking it out. You know, you have all the George Perez detail machinery and futuristic gizmos and things like that. And then you have this star cluster from space from outside the window behind it. And it's just, it's all you can ask for. When you're a kid, you see this cover, you don't care what's inside, you are buying this comic. I dare any child not to buy this comic. I mean, it's just, it's phenomenal. And it's George Perez at his best. Yeah.
As I got older and I realized what an inker did, and I look at George Perez's stuff, and he had such fantastic inkers that would do his stuff. Yeah. But you would think some of those guys would get some of these pages and just sigh heavily. Like, you have to put 13 people on the cover. You didn't. Yeah. Even Wonder Man is tiny on this cover, but his jacket has its little pockets and his red safari jacket and stuff like that. And to Perez, the answer is yes. He had to put all of those things on there.
Yeah, he has to. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the inker on the cover is actually different than the inside inker. It's Terry Austin.
Oh, you're right.
So who I think is one of his best inkers.
Absolutely.
You know, him and Romeo Tangal, I think, are maybe his best. But although Paulo does an amazing job inside too, Paulo Marcos. Anyway, well, let's go inside. I know you wanted to talk about this splash,
notoriously bad with puns. So I called it a splash page because the Beast is soaking wet.
Yes, he is.
Literally, you're looking down a very busy tech hallway with machines on both sides and screens with everything from the creative team to urgent red alert. And you can actually follow the Beast's trajectory as he's bouncing from the right side to the left, to the floor, to the top. Meanwhile, he's pulling on a bathrobe. So he's naked. Yep. He's wet and he's dripping on the Scarlet Witch, who complains about it. He makes a joke about Yes, Miss Scarlet, which I thought was great. And then he gets scolded by Cap for not getting up early at 0600, which I didn't know what that was when I read this. 77. So I think I had to ask my dad. Even the fact, and this is silly, the Beast mentions, I dropped one of my 5-gallon jugs of shampoo. And I actually thought to myself, what a gallon of milk is for me, especially when in 1977 is the size of the thing. I'd be like, why would he have, his whole body is hair.
Yeah.
And I'm like, even that it's such a throwaway. Jim Shooter on his run of the Avengers is just some of my favorite comics. And he just got them. I just thought this whole page, it's literally them coming down a hallway, but it's dynamic. And it's coming towards me and he's dripping wet.
And one of the things, and again, Paris is always the master of this, is realizing that costumes are clothing. They are not just painted on you or something. Because you see, the Scarlet Witch has her leotard on, basically, but no shoes, no cape, no whatever that silly head thing was she always wore. I always hated that. I was like, why is she wearing this? This serves no purpose.
Look like an M or a W.
I don't know. It couldn't have been comfortable. I digress. And then you have Cap, who is running forward, he's got his shield on his back and he's got his arms up around his neck like he's about to pull up his mask, and his gloves are hooked into his belt. And it's just, it's so cool because it's just these little details. You know, he doesn't have his gloves on yet. It's just amazing. And like you said, it's wall-to-wall detail. They're running down this hallway. It's just covered machinery. Why this all this stuff would be out in the middle of the hallway, we have no idea. Who cares? Barris drew it. It's awesome. It's terrific. It's terrific. And again, we have our Beast front and center right there, as he often was. He had to have been a favorite of Perez. He had to have been. He's always in the mix. And like you said, the trajectory of him bouncing, you can kind of follow it along. And it's just fun. It's just so fun.
And one thing, when I was a kid reading this, and I love superheroes and still to this day, I never once thought the Beast is like a really, really strong guy, but right. Thor is a god and Wonder Man is essentially Superman and Iron Man, but the Beast held his own with these all the time. And they even do that where he'd be like, I crack jokes because I wonder why I'm here sometimes. But I mean, even that made him such a likable character. As much as this is a fictional character, which I fully understand, he was a character that you just like to see. I just like to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was kind of reading, I think at this time when he was in the Avengers, and he was in the Avengers for a while, he was so different than he was in the X-Men early on when he was kind of more, like you said, simian or humanoid. I don't know how long it took me as a kid to realize they were the same person, because I was reading at the same time I was getting, you know, Marvel did all those reprint series, and one of them was reprinting the X-Men. I can't remember which one it was called.
Amazing Adventures.
Thank you. There you go. And I was like, this is the same guy, you know, and I don't exactly know when he... Do you know when this happened, when he transformed into the Beast? Did this happen in the X-Men? Did this happen in the Avengers?
No, it happened in... Oh, no, I wish I would have looked it up. It happened in a separate title that was written... Oh, now we're going to have to look it up. When he experimented on himself, it was in a separate title. They were trying to give him his own book.
And gray.
When he wasn't blue, he was gray. And I'm kicking myself right now that I can't think of what the title
is. All right. I kind of remember. As soon as you said he was gray, I kind of remember that now, that he was originally gray. We'll get to that.
Well, and I've gone back. I can't say I own all of these. I worked in a comic shop. So a lot of times I was able to read stuff before we had like digital access to stuff. Sure. And there are times where I'd say, I don't know if I own that or if I just read it. I've gone back. He's not the jokey, bouncy, whatever it is. He's very much almost like a Bruce Banner, like angry, tragic. Uh-huh. And so by the time he gets to Avengers, I want to say that's Steve Englehart, but that might not be either. But by the time he gets to Avengers, he gets a sense of humor. Gotcha. Because those are not like fun. They might be good comics, but to me, at least going back to read them, I'm like, oh, I want to see how he got furry. And I read him and I'm like, oh, he's really angry. That's not what I want from the Beast.
To be honest, not that much really happens in this. It's almost a setup for what's to come, this issue. But it's so gorgeous, and it's fun to read that it doesn't matter. So they basically, what they were running towards, what Beast, Cap, and Wanda were running towards, was the monitor, which Nick Fury, the original Nick Fury, is calling in to tell them that there's something that's just entered the space around their satellite, the shield satellite. And they can't really tell what it is. They have to keep panning back. And it's this gigantic space station. And I kept thinking this reminded me of something, but maybe it doesn't. Is there... I was trying to think like, well, no, it wasn't Space 1999. It didn't look like that or anything like that. I guess there really isn't. Maybe I just keep thinking of this comic. I don't know. But I was kept thinking that there was another satellite that kind of looks like the Guardian satellite, but maybe not.
I'm not getting that. I mean, I always think of the JLA satellite.
Yeah, that's a lot different. Yeah.
That doesn't look like this. It's such a cool idea, though. Like Fury's like, hey, we got this thing behind us. And they're like, no, you don't. He's like, pan back.
Yeah.
This is actually using a dial on the thing.
That's great.
The TV, because it's 1977. And they're like, oh, we can't see the stars behind you. That's because we have this giant thing that's about to run into us.
Right. And they're all awestruck. Vision is there, too. I'm sorry, we should have mentioned. He's there, too. And they're awestruck. And I think the Beast does throw out a, oh, my stars and garters. Oh, there does. It is. Page two. Yes, he does. He doesn't waste time. and they're getting ready. So they're like, okay, we need to go help S.H.I.E.L.D. They're getting ready. Now, somebody is already on the satellite. I guess in retrospect, it seems silly that he had the secret identity and kept it from the other Avengers. I don't know why and why S.H.I.E.L.D. didn't know this too. But Tony Stark is on the satellite with Nick Fury. Nobody knows that he's also Iron Man at this point. I think maybe two people. I think Thor knows, and maybe one other person knows, I think. But not even Captain America knows. Like, nobody knows. So he was helping them with some new technology. He's basically being sent back to Earth for safety reasons. So he basically has to go back to Earth, get in his suit, and then come back up to the satellite with the Avengers.
So I don't know if I'm making an unpopular comment, but I love secret identities. And the fact that he was his own bodyguard as a kid. Mm-hmm. So, and I also really loved and do love the MCU movies. I thought Robert Downey Jr. was wonderful. But when we got to the end of the very first Iron Man movie, and you didn't have 23 movies after that, and yeah, he revealed his identity, it was absolutely perfect for Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark.
Sure.
It wasn't what my Tony Stark would have done. And I know that makes me sound like one of those people. But that's why when I would go see the comic movies, I'd be like, I really liked this, but Spider-Man's webbing shouldn't be organic. It should come out of these little shooters on his wrist.
Yeah.
So I would always have quibbles like that. Yeah. It worked because of Downey, and it worked in the MCU stuff. But I actually thought it was really cool when he would have to have a conversation with somebody and pretend like he was his own bodyguard. I thought it was cute that he has to literally fly home and then fly back.
Yeah. No, I think it was funny too. His particular, because again, it just seemed weird that he wouldn't let some people in on it. Like, he wouldn't tell Captain America. Like if you can't trust Captain America, who are you going to trust? But we'll also see in this is kind of the time where they didn't get along too well. Right now, Cap was a bit of a jerk and a little bit in this for his own reasons. But Tony Stark gets sent home, and then we cut to Simon Williams, Wonder Man, and Thor are having a burger in a diner, just hanging. And it's such a great picture, almost like a Norman Rockwell style picture, where you have them sitting in this booth. Wonder Man is just in civilian clothing, but Thor is in all his regalia with And they're just sitting there, and there's a waitress serving their burgers, and everybody else in the diner is kind of looking back and staring at them and in amazement as they're trying to have this conversation. What did you think of that?
I'm going to say this for the entire podcast. Mm-hmm. This is George Perez. There are 2, 4, 6, 8 panels on this page. The one you're talking about is the center one. It's not terribly big. And he drew a whole bunch of people in the diner, all crooking their necks, looking over their shoulders, because that's what people would do. And they're like, look, it just, the effort that he would put into that stuff just made these things seem to come to life instead of just two guys sitting at a table with a waitress handing them burgers. It really looks like this stuff is going on. And I appreciate all the detail, whether that is all him and that's Pablo Marcus or, but it's amazing for that panel.
Now, what did you think of Wonder Man? This was sort of we're sort of dropping in on the Avengers in the middle of a lot of different things that's going on with them. The Beast is kind of one of the more stable characters, to be honest, right now, because you have Iron Man and Captain America are always bickering. Thor has been in the middle of this thing where he keeps disappearing and reappearing. He's not sure what's going on, why that's happening. You have Wonder Man, who is always has this sort of imposter syndrome. He has all these powers. He's been dead once and he's back. He doesn't really know who he is or what he wants to be. And he doesn't know if he can be a superhero. He doesn't even know if he's particularly all that brave, which is sort of an interesting thing for a hero, especially somebody in the Avengers. What did you think of Wonder Man?
So I came in, I mentioned earlier that my first Avengers was like 156. Mm-hmm. And Simon Williams comes back from the dead as literally a zombie, because they couldn't call him a zombie back then. And he comes back from the dead, and I'm like, I don't have any idea who this is because I'm 8 years old and whatever. But the little asterisk footnote said he was in the Avengers in number 9 or whatever it was, and he died. That blew my mind. And the idea that he came back, I didn't realize he could have been just Superman, even though he has a very similar name and similar powers. But it just... He ended up being a favorite character of mine. I love the fact that he was an actor. I thought that was very interesting. And what you were saying, the fact that, hey, I died once and I don't want to die again. So maybe just because I have these powers, maybe I don't want to be a superhero. I thought that was great.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And he's got one of the most unique costumes, right? I'm not even sure if you want to call it a costume. He's got the safari jacket and the turtleneck and wears the red shades. Kind of got those Jim Rockford sideburns going. And
that's where he's right now. When he came back, his costume was George Perez, classic every color sun and the giant on. And, you know, they would say that Perez would... and people on this network has said Perez would design characters that only and costumes that only he could draw. And when other people, thanks a lot, George.
Yeah. True. So they all get back. So they're called in. They get the call. They're all back at the Avengers Mansion. And they're kind of apparently we kind of cut through it pretty quickly, but they're basically standing around waiting for Iron Man. Yep. He finally shows up right about when they're about to leave. Cap's giving him an earful. Iron Man basically tells him to shut up and let's go. And so they head to the satellite. Yeah, go ahead.
I've always been a Captain America guy. And again, I mean, I was a kid who was Captain America was Marvel's Superman. And so and I read this for this podcast. I reread this the other day and I was like, what's up with Cap? Like, he seems like he's really, and I'm like, in my brain, I start thinking, is this Serpent Crown stuff? Is he mad about, you know, the Serpent Society or something going on? So he seems like he's coming across way too hard. And even later on, Thor makes a reference to Iron Man. Like, it's okay that Cap is yelling at you unnecessarily, but but I actually like, if I ever had to pick between the two, I would always pick Cap over Iron Man as a kid.
Oh, and sure.
I like the idea of Iron Man saying, just so shut up and let's go.
Yeah. Now, and this is another Perez classic too. You turn to the next page, you have all the Avengers getting suited up to go in the space. They basically have to go from the SHIELD satellite over to the, what they don't know at the time, it's Guardian satellite. And they're all in different states of preparation. Now you have Thor and Iron Man and Vision don't have to do anything because they can go into space, no problem. But you have a SHIELD operative putting Cap's helmet on. And they're all in these spacesuits. And you have somebody working with Wonder Man to kind of fix his belt. And then you have the Scarlet Witch is getting her gloves adjusted. You know, you have all this going on. And it's just, again, showing that this is clothing. They're not painted on costumes. They don't come like in one piece. It's great.
And they make it part of the story too, because the one text says, you know, Wonder Man, you might not need this, but you don't want to die. They're just like, because I just did that. So, I mean, that progresses the story.
Absolutely. So they go in through the airlock, they go over, they find what they think is an airlock, thanks to some Stark tech. Apparently the Stark tech that Tony had put in there earlier was able to detect an opening in the satellite, which they assumed was an airlock. They go in there, they realize they can breathe, which sort of surprises them because they're like, well, who's on this satellite? Are they normal humans? Again, you have Perez is just throwing out haymakers left and right here, just putting all this technology, all this, these wires and this machinery going every which way, just cause he can do it.
Well, and showing even off. The spacesuits, they needed those spacesuits for a page and a half, but that they did what they were supposed to and they got there and they can breathe. And when you're reading this, doesn't matter what age you are, when you're reading this, that makes sense. Once they found out they could breathe, they take off the suits. Their superhero costumes are underneath it, which is awesome because of course they would be, but they didn't need them anymore. So we're going to take it off. So,
what you were mentioning before, Cap sort of, even though he's not technically leader right now, all of a sudden starts barking orders, telling the group to split up, and they split up. You have Iron Man and Thor going one way, you have Captain America and Wonder Man going another way. You've got the Vision, Scarlet Witch going another way. And then you have the Beast on his own. He sends him out on his own, which he's a little bummed about. He didn't get, you know, kind of makes a joke of it. But that you mentioned to me before, like what's kind of going on here? What did you think of that, of Cap doing that, and how everyone reacted to it?
Because I just reread this issue without reading the ones before. I just assumed that he was the team leader. But right. I mean, to me, Cap would be the team leader of any room that he's in. Like you would bow to whatever he said. It's just the way he does it. And they even, like, Perez draws like Iron Man, like, twisting his head, like, what? Yeah. Like, that's my job, you know? And so it's just like, what's going on with Cap that he's like that? And going to progress the story, and the conversation on the next page has, you know, Thor telling Iron Man, you know, don't feel bad. Even it's like your supervisor just dressed you down in front of your whole crew. Or you did that to your super, you know, I mean, it's like, don't feel bad. So I just didn't know why Cap seemed so angry in this issue.
One thing we cannot overlook with Iron Man, and I think we only get it on this one panel, but did you notice how Iron Man is getting around?
He's
on this satellite.
The roller skates.
Yes, the roller skates.
I rereading old Iron Man when they would do transistor and everything, because Stan didn't know what it was, and he used and he had those. I'd slap on the magnetic roller skates, because, you know, that's got to be a George Perez like love letter to all of that goofy stuff.
There was no reason to have him on roller skates going around here. Thor's flying, everybody else is flying who can. But there he is, roller skating. It's so great. And there's sort of like steam coming out from behind him too with the roller. You see that? as if like there's like something, like they're propelling him as from his back or something like that. So it's so great. I love that they gave him the roller skates. And then finally we get our hero. We get Beast. He's got a little alone time here. He's going around, and he realizes why Cap sent him alone. So he can go through all these kind of tighter corridors and up above. You know, he's going through some corridors. He finds an opening door. He comes out of it, the circular door, and you see a hand reaching down and yanks him up. And who have we finally met?
Well, and even that, before he gets yanked up, you see the panel with the boot as he's coming out, and Hank's not turning around. And then you see the hand coming up, and then you see Hank getting lifted up into the air. It's so much motion that's happening. Even though we're looking at these, you know, flat images, it looks like these people are moving. And that's so cool. It's like when he bounces up through the air ducts, and just those little lines showing him bouncing from one side to the other gives that movement. So he gets grabbed by two characters that he doesn't know are members of the Guardians of the Galaxy, and they're talking to each other. And what I like about that too is they talk to each other in nicknames and stuff too. It wasn't like you were reading a comic where there's a little like nameplate in front of everybody for every character. I love the fact that Charlie 27, who's the big strong character of the Guardians of the Galaxy, he's holding the Beast by the fur on the back of his, what would be essentially between his shoulder blades. The way you would pick up a cat, and it always looks like it hurts a cat, but
like the scruff of his neck, basically.
And the comments that happened are just fantastic. The Beast's reaction, and he's like, bah, 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 and they're like, oh, look at, he's stupid, he's just repeating sounds. And then he makes a hoss Cartwright reference. I had to stop and be like, I didn't watch Bonanza, but I know that was, and in 1977 everybody knew that type of thing. Just, it doesn't take me onto the story now, it just brings me joy.
After they think he's a space monkey, which obviously offends him. And then, yes, like you said, he says, I refuse to dangle here and be slandered by an extraterrestrial facsimile of Hoss Cartwright, which is just a great line. Because, again, you kind of forget, because in the Avengers, he's a lot more fun-loving and bouncing around. You forget how smart this guy is. And he'll throw it out sometimes. So he's being held out in front of Charlie 27 by a scruff of his neck. But somehow he's able to get his feet up there and smack him on both sides. He basically box his ears with his feet. It's just great. The fight ensues. I'm sorry. The woman, they call her Nikki, but she had a longer name than that, right? Or was it just Nikki?
It was just Nikki. I remember.
Okay. All right. Maybe you're right. I'm sorry.
I mean, they might have given her like Yondu at one point got a full name or something
Oh,
like that.
okay.
But
Okay.
I
I
mean,
was.
her superhero name was Nikki.
Okay. All right. And Nikki is, she has the most unique thing about her. She sort of has like a grayish purple skin, but her hair is on fire, much like some guy named Fire Stick, Fire Guy. I forget what his name is. There's another guy in DC that has flaming heads. Not important. Anyway, but yeah. So her hair is on fire and she's kind of dressed like, and I think they even refer to her as this. She's kind of dressed like a cowgirl, kind of almost a cowgirl slash dancer or something like that. So she's got the frills on her shorts and on her shoulders and stuff like that. And she's got sort of a space six shooter. And
Yeah,
she's
little stuff.
blasting at Beast. Yeah, she's blasting at Beast and can't quite get him. But he's getting some height up there, the Beast. I mean, he's really covering some distance and very fast. So he looks like he's probably, I don't know, 200 feet in the air at some point. They're a little confused by that. Beast comes down to try to hit Charlie 27, but then he realized he is a Jovian and has 11 times more mass than the average human. So he hits Charlie 27. It's like hitting a brick wall, basically. So he
Yeah,
just bounces
that
off.
last panel on that page, because the Beast had been basically like running away, bouncing away to come back like on the cover. And it's such a great panel where Charlie 27 has just got his arms at his side, like he's ready for a shootout, and the Beast just bounces off of him. And the dialogue tells you all that stuff. I mean, he was from Jupiter, so he's Jovian, but he's one from one of the moons, which is why he was Charlie 27. And I felt like these stories have been happening before I was here, and these stories will still be happening after I'm gone. And I came in the middle, and I'm visiting the Marvel Universe. And that's what I love about that. And the DC Universe is those big picture things, like, hey, it's okay if you're not here, because these characters are going to just keep going. And just thought they didn't stop and introduce them. I mean, yes, Thor will show up and say, okay, I met him before. But in the middle of the action, the conversation between the characters tells you stuff about the characters, and you're just learning on every panel.
So the Beast is sort of knocked for, gets the wind knocked out of him a little bit, and Nikki kind of comes in to finish him off. And then there is a big blast from above that sort of separates them both. And you see coming down the staircase like it's the Brady Bunch. You have the rest of the rest of the they have this they have this giant satellite that's like the size of Nebraska, but they're all in like the same room apparently. So they all come down, and you have Yondu and Starhawk and Vance Astro and
Martin X.
Martin X. Thank you, shiny
And
guy.
Martin X was my favorite one as a kid, besides Charlie 27, because I was an Iceman fan, and he kind of looks like
You bet,
Iceman.
yeah.
The vision, he's made out of crystals, and I just thought that was so cool.
Yeah. So what did you think? Now, you obviously have some experience with these Guardians. And again, for everyone in the lounge, these were technically the original Guardians, the original ones to be introduced in the Marvel comics, even though they were from the future. As the now Guardians of the Galaxy that we know are actually from present Marvel time. These Guardians of the Galaxies were from the future, kind of like a Legion of Superheroes, like 1,000 years in the future. Like, was this the first time you ever saw these guys? Okay, this is the first time you ever saw them. I
And
think,
I the
yeah, go
next
ahead.
time would have been a Marvel 2-in-1 or a Marvel team up. I mean, I wasn't reading Thor at the time, and he meeting him, and I didn't get it from Cap, so this would have been the first time that I would have.
Yeah, I have a Marvel team up where Spider-Man teams up with them. I don't know if it's the entire crew, but I distinctly remember Nikki being on the cover. I don't remember which other character. I'd have to look it up, see what other characters. And I had a couple issues of Marvel Premiere or whatever that they I still have those. I think I have like issue like 2 and 4 or something like that, or 3 and 5, something like that, something weird. And I have those as well. So I kind of, when I saw him in this comic, I was like, I kind of know who these guys are. I remember the guy with the big, I was like, I remember the guy with the fin and the bow and arrow, Yondu, who had kind of the cool, I thought had the coolest look. And I remember Starhawk and obviously Nikki. And those are kind of the ones I remembered. But when you saw these guys, you were like, oh, well, that's interesting, but who cares? Or was it something like, oh, I'd like to know more about these guys? Or what were you thinking?
I am a superhero team fan. So whenever I mean, I'm a fan of teams that only were teams for a short time, and the Rangers and the Champions and things like that. So every time I would come upon a new team, I probably shouldn't admit this, but I would take my little index card or my little notebook and I'd be writing names down and stuff like that
That's
because
awesome.
that's why I love the official handbook of the Marvel Universe and of course the Who, which is why I'm here. But the idea that knowing these things mattered to me, knowing that his name was Martin X mattered to me. I can't tell you what I was supposed to do last Tuesday, but I can tell you his name's Martin X. I love that. And when they show, Vance Astro with the I was born in present day and I'm in this suit and I'm 1,000 years old. And if I take out this suit, I'm going to turn to dust. I didn't know it was like a play on Buck Rogers because I didn't know who Buck Rogers was until the Gil Gerard TV show. And didn't really, but the idea that when Vance Astro meets the Thing in Marvel 2-in-1, he meets his younger self. They use that to explain how the multiverse works and how there's divergent realities and stuff. And that's in like issue 58 of some book that if you didn't read, you didn't know that. So I love that. I mean, I mentioned the Legion before. We could talk about the Legion and just start rattling off characters.
Oh, sure. Don't get me down that path. We will be
Sorry.
completely divergent.
Only six
So
weeks
sorry,
left.
Beast. We'll talk about you some more, Beast. But I was the same way. I thought these guys, oh, they're really cool, and it was fun to see them. And they kind of stick around for a while too. I know because we'll talk about that in a minute. But anyway, the Beast is like it's kind of apoplectic about the way these guys are just kind of talking like he doesn't even exist and everything like that, and kind of telling him what to do. So he jumps at them again,
Which
and
is
all of a
great
sudden.
because he couldn't take on two of them and
Right,
now
right.
six of them. But
Yeah.
I don't think that's a bad thing. That shows like I love the hero who doesn't give up even when the odds are against him. He
Sure.
doesn't be like, oh my God, I'm going to turn tail and run, or I'm going to help, call the other Avengers.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm ready to jump into the fray against all of you.
Yeah.
And that what happens to him is super cute.
Yeah. So all of a sudden you see Thor's hammer come flying in, and the strap on Thor's hammer, the greatest shot ever, I guess, just goes right around Beast's foot and drags him back to Thor, where he catches them. And you see all the Avengers standing there, and he's like, "Hang on, we know these guys, don't fight." And Cap again, because he's a kind of a jerk in this one. It's like, "I'm, you should have known. I had this in the archives that I had met these guys. Why didn't you read that?"
Do your
And
homework.
Wonder Man sticks up for him, which is we talked a little bit about that. What did you do you like the Wonder Man Beast friendship team up?
Love it. And at the time, there's an issue coming up. There's a lot of really good things coming up after this issue, but there's an issue coming up where the two of them go to the splash page of that one is the Adventures of Robin Hood. The actual Errol Flynn movie is like photostatted in there, and they're watching the movie and they're talking about the stuff. And I just the friendship between those two characters just seemed so legitimate, and I thought that was so great.
And it's an interesting dichotomy too, because you have, the Beast is this short, furry monster, but he's the one with the confidence. And then you have Simon, you have Wonder Man, who's this tall, handsome, ultra powerful guy, and he's the one who just he has no confidence. He's kind of so they kind of have this dichotomy, but work really well as pals. Like you said, I think you mentioned like Beetle and Booster, kind of along those lines, or even, I don't know, Timberwolf. If we want to go to Legion, Timberwolf and Block kind of had a similar relationship, stuff like that. So yeah, they work really well, and I think they had a mini series together, didn't they?
The friendship. Certain writers couldn't write it, and then it went away. But I want to say they did a 3-issue mini series, and they got somebody like Kurt Busiek or somebody like that who understood what it was and how to do it. It's not going to be the same as when I was 9, but at least I remember they were acting like I expected them to act.
And of course, then you have the post-fight get-together handshake, where again, this is what one of six panels dead center, and Perez draws every single character in this thing. full body poses, all sort of talking to one another. He didn't have to do
No,
that.
but there's
He
and
didn't have to
there's a
do that. It's so
tremendous
great.
amount of words on this page too. And that was the part when I turned the when I electronically turned the page on my tablet, when I'm looking at it going, wow, there's a lot of words on this page. But there's not a part where I feel like, oh, he could just phone in that panel, because he still does amazing with all those.
He has basically three group shots on these on this page alone. So anyway, so they all kind of meet and remember each other. Cap had met them before, Thor had met them before, all that stuff, and they start talking about that. They start talking about this guy Korvac, who's this kind of half man, half machine madman that the Guardians are always after, and how he's trying to basically from here, the next two pages are more or less them talking about Korvac and sort of recanting what happened, or not recant, but talking about recalling what happened with Korvac in the past and everything, and how he's a danger, and they think he's come to the present because he's going to kill Vance Astro as a child, and they're worried about that. What do you think of Korvac? Here, this look, because the next page we get a full page look. Can you describe Korvac for our friends in the
Sure.
lounge?
So he looks from the waist up like a standard Marvel hero or Marvel villain, and kind of purple and blue, and he's got these things like across his chest. He's got straps and arms, and he's doing a rah pose. The part that freaked me out is from the waist down, he's not only a machine, he's a box, and then he's like this weird satellite thing off the bottom of it too, with this weird shape. As a kid, I didn't realize how important Korvac was, even though they just spent the last two pages saying, look at this, this is going to be important. But I when I turn the page and I'm like, why does he look like he's stuck in a machine and it hurts? So visually, I was not impressed by Korvac. What I do love is the other characters, the other six Guardians, are doing the floating heads on the same page. And again, there is a heck of a lot of exposition here, but I didn't read it as a kid going, oh, look at all those words. They were telling me stuff I needed to know, but I did not understand why he had a box for a torso or a lower back.
It almost looks like, if you look in front of it, it almost looks like he's stuck inside a VCR. He's like coming out of an old VCR or something like that. The thing, yeah, and you mentioned that there's a ton of exposition on this page where they're talking about this. And Perez lays it out so well because he's got the floating heads on either side, and in the middle they have a picture so you can see the kind of full aspect of Korvac looking like this raging madman inside his VCR. But he still makes it look cool. It still looks cool. I mean, it still
It
looks
looks
cool. And they're
disturbingly
all,
cool.
yeah. And they're obviously talking about this guy's bad news. And it's like, look at us. We have all these powers, and we can't get this guy. They're obviously talking to Avengers about, getting together with him. And then that's kind of the end of that particular adventure. And then we move, and again, Peros moves effortlessly from this space in adventure where all this crazy technology and spandex superheroes to Park Avenue for a fashion show for inside like an older like this is inside like a hotel ballroom. It probably didn't cost $1 billion, by the way, either. But yeah, so he's inside his ballroom, and they're announcing this fashion show that's being held by Janet Van Dyne, of course, or is she now Van Dyne Pym? Okay, she's Janet Van Dyne Pym right now.
But even
And
that, the top panel is a group of people watching a fashion
yes.
show, and you didn't have to draw, George didn't have to draw 15 of them or whatever it is,
No.
all different sizes. And yes, the inker and the colorist did an amazing job too. We got to give shout out too, but it looks like a room full of people,
Yeah,
like a room
absolutely.
full
It's
of
amazing.
people.
And he drew all the backgrounds too, and the drapes and the windows and the just everything. It's crazy. So they're doing this fashion show, and we have, I always want to call him Mitch Richmond, because it was a guy who was a guard who played for the Sacramento Kings in like the 90s. I just said Kyle Richmond is the who is
Nighthawk.
Nighthawk. Yes. So he's in attendance. So is Hank Pym, of course. And this guy sitting next to Kyle, we don't know who he is. yet, but he's sort of this strange guy in a tuxedo, a very serious, perfectly parted to the side, this blonde-haired guy in a tuxedo. And he's sitting there stoically until a certain model gets on stage, Karina Walters, and all of a sudden he perks up. And Richmond notices that too.
Well, and it's important that Nighthawk was there. I think Nighthawk is an awesome costume, mm-hmm. and that this made me like him. But it's important that he's there because he's telling the reader, this guy's acting weird.
Yes.
And if he doesn't tell me that, it just looks like the guy's just kind of looking at the model. And then all of a sudden, like you see him move, and it's Kyle Richmond's thoughts that are like, hey, this is the first reaction I've seen from this guy. And it, again, progresses the story in just a couple of panels.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. So you're a big Nighthawk fan, you said?
Yeah. Well, and I think it's a type of character that I really, really liked because of the visual. And Steve Gerber's Defenders, which I bought some of those right at this era, were so weird for me. Like Chandu the Mystic and all that stuff like that, and the Headmen and the whole thing. There's a lot of Steve Gerber comics that I read when I was 8 or 9 that I just didn't get. Like, and I didn't understand. Like, literally, Nighthawk, they took his brain out in the Defenders and stuff. And I just wanted the guy who looked like he does in here and acted like he does in here. So I think he's one of those characters that in my brain, in my heart, he's better than he was ever depicted in some of the story. And again, Steve Gerber's Defenders are loved. I've gone back and read some and liked them a lot more, but I always felt like Steve Gerber was on a different wavelength than me.
Yeah. Now, maybe you know this, maybe you don't, or maybe someone in the lounge can fill us in on this. Now, obviously, there's a Nighthawk in the Squadron Supreme. That's a different person, different Earth, different reality. It's not the same guy.
I can do this.
Okay, go ahead.
So the Grandmaster, the bad guy who likes to play games, created the Squadron Sinister first as the... Nope, that's wrong. First off, they had the Squadron Supreme on an alternate Earth that the Avengers visited. Obviously, they were analogs of Superman and Batman and the Flash and Green Lantern, because I think there was just 4 in the Squadron Supreme. And that's Roy Thomas and John Buscema, I think. And then the Grandmaster created the Squadron Sinister using characters from the regular Marvel universe. And that was this Kyle Richmond. So his first stuff was being essentially a pawn of the bad guys. And that character then redeems himself by becoming a superhero Nighthawk.
Oh, okay.
I am humongous Squadron Supreme fan, and I could talk at length about them too, but I'm not going to. They've changed it so many times with different Nighthawks and different versions of them. And but this particular character that we're reading about in this comic is the one that the Grandmaster tricked into being a part of the Squadron Sinister.
And okay.
Then became a good guy. That might be the shortest answer I've ever given.
Very good. Very good. Okay. Well, and if you guys really like his costume, you're going to love the porcupines who comes running in here with his with 5 thugs ready. He was just going to, apparently he just went to the hotel to rob the hotel. And he's like, hey, why don't we check out the ballroom? So, and then there was the fashion show going on. So he's like, I'm going to do this. Melee ensues and Nighthawk comes out. Nighthawk, look, Perez makes him look awesome, by the way, in his costume. That kind of dark blue contrast with the red and the yellow. It's a really cool costume. It doesn't look that cool when he's standing still, but when he's in action, it looks amazing. You know.
And there's been artists that have drawn the Nighthawk costume where he has little like vents coming out of the thing because it's like a jetpack or whatever it was. Not everybody drew the mask the right way, so sometimes it looked too flat on his face. I can't let the porcupine go without saying, as a kid, when I saw the porcupine, he always looked like a straw hut with like a head. And I never really, on the page where Nighthawk is actually powing one of the guys and he looks amazing, porcupine's shooting from his quills. But I'm not an artistic person, but I would not have drawn the porcupine to make it look like he's made out of straw. I just never really understood why he looked, and they changed him later. Thankfully, but I mean, this is, you know, Jim Shooter wanted to do this too. So, I mean, that's fun.
For as ridiculous as he is, I would still think facing him would be a little scary, because if this guy's just firing, because look at him. He doesn't look like he can really touch him, though. That's the thing, because he's got just quills everywhere. And he just starts firing that stuff out. I don't know. It'd be a little scary, to be honest with you. I porcupines, he's got my trepidation. He's got my respect on this. I don't want to face the porcupine.
I'll be honest with you. He's probably got my respect too, because I'd be afraid of anybody shooting at me with their quills.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to hurt. That's going
to
hurt.
Also, so. 9-year-old me has to say this. The top of this page has the wasp, and her thought balloon talks about the fact that she's wearing an outfit made of unstable molecules. Yeah. Or else she'd be going into the battle naked.
Right,
and I,
right.
To this day, chuckle when I get to that page, so I'm not much different than when I was home. But I thought it was great that they had to mention that.
Yeah, I just always remember thinking, oh, rats. But that's me. So, you know, they're knocking out the thugs. They're taking out the porcupine. And in the meantime, the aforementioned tuxedoed blonde guy, who's, who looked very serious, approaches the one blonde...
Karina Walters.
Karina Walters. Thank you. Karina Walters. And more or less sort of they lock eyes, and she's enchanted, almost in a trance or hypnotized. And they touch hands and then disappear. And in the meantime, they've taken out Porcupine, and they're wondering where she is. And they make a little chuckle joke at the end. And that's, you know, and that's it. So I think she literally tells Nighthawk. Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
A very 70s reference.
Yes. Sit on it.
Sit on it. Yeah, I mean, the other thing that I really loved is this whole thing with the guy and the model could have been done in many different ways. But this one, I want to give credit to Shooter. Shooter's like, let's make Yellow Jacket look cool. Let's make the Wasp look cool. Let's throw in Nighthawk just because. Maybe that'll make, you know, and that they take out the porcupine. It's not just a bunch of thugs. Again, it's that whole big picture Marvel. I didn't like, oh, the space part of the story is done. This is just the next part of the story. And yep. It looks amazing and it's fast, and they could have done it in a much more boring way. Mm-hmm. And as a reader, I'm like, I see what's happening with the guy and the model. Yep. And I know it means I got to come back next issue.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, spoiler alert for something that came out in 1977, the blonde guy is Korvac. So this is kind of towards the beginning of the Korvac saga. You know, this is sort of kicking it off and everything, which is huge for me when I was a kid, because this, I feel like this was sort of my first introduction to the Avengers. I have all the issues from the Korvac saga. And unfortunately, Perez didn't illustrate every single one of them. He only did a couple of them. He did most of the covers,
right?
If not all the covers. And it was always a little disappointing when you'd see that and you get inside and there'd be somebody else drawing it. But still overall, and it goes through twists and turns. We actually, last year, we covered a different... we covered the kind of the Hawkeye-centric issue of this Korvac saga when they faced a collector. Sean Ross and I did that one where Hawkeye's sort of fighting alone after everybody gets knocked out and he takes out the collector. So I think in the Fantastic Four, we're going to cover every issue of the of the Korvac saga. Yeah, that's my goal.
I'll be honest with you. We've been talking for this long, and in my head, I'm like, even though it's a comic from 1977, in my head, I'm like, I can't spoil it. And when you finally said Korvac saga, I was like, thanks.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly, when people say, what's your favorite Avengers story? I don't pause. It's the Korvac saga. And people are like, I don't even know who that is. You know, tell me about Kang, or tell me about Immortus, or tell me about whatever. And I'm like, the reason why the Korvac saga worked for me was it was the long game. Like George Perez and Shooter. I got to say Shooter more than anything else. He had people vanishing like a diner and you didn't know why. Thor says it in this issue, I keep showing up and I don't know why I'm here, and the whole thing, like, it's not, I'm not saying that all modern comics are bad, because I read new comics, but they the idea that creators plan to be on a book, you know, John Ostrander was one of those guys who would write us something with the idea it might take 12 issues, but I'm gonna get to that subplot,
right?
And on top of it, what you just said too, making Hawkeye the quote unquote Avenger with no powers be the one to save them all was that was a that whole thing was a run, and then they die. And as a kid, when I saw that's that cover with Don Blake on the cover,
yeah.
those comics resonated with me because they were they took a long a slow boil long game to tell an epic. So I tell people, you know, people are like Avengers Forever, and I'm like Avengers Forever is really good, but the Korvac saga is my favorite.
I'll tell you a dirty little secret. I wasn't that crazy about Avengers Forever. It just didn't grab me for whatever reason. I don't know why. I think because I thought that they were going to continue to introduce, like I thought like the Avengers roster was going to keep changing, but they basically focused on what, five or six main characters. There was some back forth, but I was like, oh, I thought maybe we'd see, you know, Iron Man from this period, or we'd see, you know, stuff like that. I don't think it's the fault of the storyline. I think it's more the fault of my expectations. I think I was just kind of hoping for something else and got something different. It's good, but it wasn't. I just, you know.
I mean, I love the art by Carlos.
The art was gorgeous. Oh, the art was gorgeous. Yeah.
And what I chalk that up to was it was Kurt Busiek correcting everything that he thought was wrong. Like he'd go back and say, no, the Vision was not the original Human Torch. Let me explain how that works. Let me explain Immortus. It was like a fan coming in going, you know, I'm going to correct all the things that were wrong. Because there were footnotes, like there was a page of in each issue with footnotes and stuff. I liked Avengers Forever, but it ain't no Korvac saga.
Well, you know what? I'm right there with you, man. I love Korvac saga. So and like you said, especially that the ending when you know the whole battle, which was just crazy. You're like, what? What's happening? And the way it ends. I don't want to like, you know, we don't want to spoil the whole thing in case anybody wants to read it. I highly recommend reading it. You can read it on Marvel Unlimited, or they, you know, they have the trade paperbacks of it and stuff like that too. It's definitely worth reading. It's a lot of fun. Definitely. So there's definitely some highs and lows to the art. Like I said, Perez doesn't do the whole thing, but the highs are really high and the lows aren't that bad. There's still, it doesn't kill the story or anything. You still enjoy it. So let's go back a little bit more to our star, the guy we're here originally to talk about. I know this has become a bit of a George Perez love fest, but it's hard not to. He's so good. He was the best. Again, when I think of comic book art, I think of George Perez, and you know, period. But the Beast. We were talking a little bit when you were talking so well about why you liked him and sort of his different iterations and everything. And I'd say this is probably. This iteration of the Beast is probably the one I'm most familiar with as an Avenger, just because I read all those, you know, and he was a lot of fun. He would bounce around. And I knew him kind of from before when he was the original X-Men, from reading all those reprints and everything back in the day. And then, you know, I read the X-Men in the 90s some, and, you know, Beast was there, and he was more, it seemed when he was with the X-Men, it was more his intellect was the showcase. You know, a lot of times he was in his lab. He wasn't always out there fighting. A lot of the times he was working on something, or he was trying to fix something or develop something. And in the Avengers, he was a swashbuckler. You know, he was out there fighting and bouncing around and having fun and having a good time and palling around with Wonder Man. So, you know, once the 90s came, the X-Men were kind of like, all right, we're taking him back. And, you know, he's ours now. He's not an X-Men anymore, or he's not an Avenger anymore. He's an X-Man. Again, like you said, he went through a lot of changes, physical changes too. At one point when I think around the time it was either Grant, I think, was it during the Grant Morrison run where he kind of takes on more of almost like a cat look or something like that. So he's not as, go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
No.
Tell me
not.
More about it. Yes.
No, what I wanted to say about the Grant Morrison stuff was the Grant Morrison stuff people reference when people are like, oh, you got to read Burning Claremont. And then I went away until Grant Morrison. And that's not true, because Fabian Nicieza and Scott Lobdell did some great stuff too. But anyways, what irritated me a lot, and I mentioned working in a comic shop, if you frequented that comic shop and you ever got me going on the Beast, one of the things was the TV show, The Beauty and the TV show Beauty and the Beast with Ron Perlman and Linda Hamilton. And I think
Yes.
Grant Morrison must, and I'm not being sarcastic, must have seen an episode and decided that the Beast needed to look like Vincent. So he suddenly,
That's a good point. I never even thought of that.
and I'm like, he's, and I, the part that drove me nuts as a fan is I'm like, he's not feline, he's simian. And
Yeah.
in the Grant, and it's drawn by Frank Quitely, so it looks good, but
Yeah.
he's talking about how I don't even have five fingers anymore. I have these paws, and I'm like, he's supposed to be monkey-like, not
Yeah.
cat-like. Since then, everybody else has either thought that was a great idea or just keep messing with him. Sometimes, like I'll look at the current X-Men stuff, and there's a version of him that's evil and they're from another timeline, and then there's a version of him that, and I just wish they wouldn't have messed with him so much. Because he was so, Swashbuckler is a great way, fun adventure character. And I just feel like they made him into a tragic, you know, and there's, and you don't make him the villain either. Or, you know, it's just, it, that part really just bothers me.
Yeah, he went through so many changes, and then when they did, well, this is before the Grant Morrison, but when they did Age of Apocalypse, there was the evil Beast from that one, and somehow he came into our universe and was this great villain. And now, like you said, do you know much about it? He is like sort of a villain now, correct? He is an arch villain.
I don't know if he, if it's
Okay.
actually the quote 616 version of Hank McCoy. That's all. What I mean, I see those things when the new ones come out on my t as far as Marvel Unlimited episodes or
Yeah.
issue. But I just like, I'm like, even if it's an alternate universe version of the Beast, I'm tired of them doing Dark Beast is what they called him from Age of
Oh,
Apocalypse.
okay, yeah.
But I mean, it was like, then you didn't have to bring him over too, and then you didn't have to have him take over. And again, this
Yeah.
is comics. You can undo all these things by
Sure,
just
absolutely.
take the cosmic cube and saying it never happened, or have a crisis on Infinite Earths and say it never happened.
Yeah.
But I just, when back going all the way back, I'm gonna actually backtrack. When they deferred him in X Factor, and he was simian because they wanted him, they wanted the original five back together. This was in the early, late 80s or whatever it was,
I
early 90s.
forgot about that. Yeah, that's
Yes.
right. He was back
And
sort of like human.
there's actually some good stuff there because they DA or they deferred him. He was monkey-like, and then he started to lose his intellect. And that was Walt Simonson, I think. And I don't know if I'm not giving credit to somebody who wrote it with Walt, or if it was Walt and Wheezy doing it together.
I think it was the two of them doing it together, I
And the
think. Yeah.
idea that this really smart guy knows he's doing the flowers for Algernon thing, where all of a sudden he's not going to be smart anymore, and every day he's like, that was great. I was not a huge fan of the X Factor book when it was the original four because they weren't sure about the whole gene thing. But I understand it was something to do. But it's, I would rather have that, not that him losing his intellect, but him being like monkey-like
Sure.
than. There was almost like a almost, I want to say like an underwater or an aquatic lizard one where he had gills and stuff like that or more. And I don't know why they can't, somebody can't just say, hey, let's just make one that's fun.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. He was always so fun with the Avengers. And I read the X-Men for a long time. I can't speak to exactly what they're doing now. It's not fair for me to say so because I haven't read it. I read the sorry, when they were the Krakoa era. I read that for the most part. The main book, basically. I always felt like, again, he was just sort of this really kind of serious, solemn guy. And he wasn't really out doing things. He was more just kind of on the island and working on stuff and doing this and doing that. And that was kind of the last I've really seen of him. So I can't really speak to whether it's good or bad, what they're doing with him now, but it sure doesn't sound like a lot of fun from what I've read, or from what
There's
I've
a
heard, I should
whole
say.
lot of people that love the Jonathan Hickman Krakoa stuff, and
Right.
I actually am not one of those people because it strays too far from, you know, sworn to protect a world that hates and fears them.
Yeah.
And I mean, I understand these characters have been published for so long, and every month they got to come up with a new idea.
Right.
But I just there's ones where in the Hickman Krakoa stuff, and I didn't read all of it, but I jumped back on when the that we got all that praise, they can't die anymore. And it's
Yeah,
like
they
not
would be reborn and stuff
yeah
like
and
that. Because the first, basically the first issue of it, they all die. They're like the one team, they all die, like Nightcrawler and Wolverine and Cyclops, and they all die in their first mission, but they're reborn. And yeah, that sort of kicks the whole thing off. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was an interesting read. Hickman can get, I don't want to say full of himself, but he can, kind of take things a little too far at times, or be a little too self-serious. He did a run right before that on the Avengers, where they became more global and universal, and the whole battle with Thanos and stuff like that, which was interesting. But I liked Krakoa for what it was. I was reading it on Unlimited, so I was like, it's not costing me anything. I'll read it, and check it out. And it was fun for a while. I thought the way it ended was pretty grim, actually, the way it ended.
Did like a massacre, right? The gate.
Yeah, there was a massacre, I don't know. I mean, they all just re they had to reset the board, and they did it in a pretty rough way. It was interesting for what it was. I don't hold the X-Men that near and dear to my heart, so I wasn't like, oh no, they can't do this to my favorite character or anything like that. I kind of can take or leave them depending on what's going on. I'll read certain eras and not read certain eras and stuff like that. So,
I would call
yeah.
myself an X-Men fan, but what I really am is a fan of that sweet spot of X-Men 94 to probably 200, where you had Claremont and you had Cockrum and you had Byrne and then you had Paul Smith. Because, I mean, there's a lot of good, like, kind of short. And I thought Age of Apocalypse was wonderful because it its own little self-contained thing and it was messed up. But the success of Age of Apocalypse was its own worst enemy because then they had to, like, now we got to top that. And I look at a character and I'm not going to keep going, but I'll make this fast. A character like Cyclops to me is supposed to be the X-Men's Captain America. And when you make Cyclops Magneto or worse, you don't know who Cyclops is, at least to me. And it's hard for me to get invested in those stories because I'm like, you don't even know who the main good guy is. So, I mean, I am very territorial with these characters and they do mean a lot to me. And so when they do that to the Beast, I'm kind of like, why do they got to do that to a character that I genuinely like? And I wish they would make it like that again.
Yeah, no, I get it. So,
Old man shouting
I
at
was
clouds.
gonna say, hopefully we don't sound like two old men shouting at clouds. But I just, X-Men Beast, lighten up a little bit. Maybe
Yes.
don't be a villain. So
I mean,
there's my
and
advice to him.
going all the way back to Hank, the 90s X-Men cartoon made him at least known to the public, which was really nice. But he spent the first like six episodes in jail to prove a point. But he was also there. He was their scientist. He was their doctor. And that part was fine. But he's not like that in these issues of Avengers that we're talking about here.
No,
He, if
no.
anything, he was comedic relief. So, I mean, it
Absolutely, yeah, he was the fun guy. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, he was the fun guy. And that's how we liked him. And that's the way it was, and we liked it. Anything else you want to say about Beast? Anything else you want to say about this comic?
I'm
Anything?
sure I have more to say about Beast, but I think even I know it's time to stop.
All right. Yeah, very good. All right. Well, listen, John, it's last call. In this segment, I ask my insightful guest, John, some thought-provoking questions that came to me as I prepared for the show. I ask the questions. John fascinates us all with his answers. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Fantastic question number one. You've got a seven-hero super team with the Beast as a member. Is he with the X-Men, Avengers, or Defenders? And name the other six members of your team.
Well, I'm glad I had the opportunity to know about this question beforehand. Because as I stated earlier, if Beast is on there, it's the Avengers. It's not the X-Men, not anymore, sadly. It's not the Defenders. I love them, but I was not a fan of the era where Beast was part of the team with Angel and Iceman and Gargoyle and Cloud and Moondragon. No thanks. So it's an Avengers lineup featuring Beast, Wonder Man, Captain America, Hawkeye, Thor, Iron Man, and Wasp. And I'm sorry that's not so original, but it's kind of my first blush when I created the lineup. It's the first ones I thought of. I love so many more, like Quicksilver and Black Panther and Hercules and Hank Pym when he was Yellow Jacket and stuff. But that would be my core Avengers. However, I was also tempted, because this is what I do for fun, to create a truly unusual lineup of the Avengers featuring my favorite C and, to be honest, D-list characters that would have Beast as the team leader. And I picked 3D Man, not Triathlon, Paladin, Razorback, Torpedoes. That would be the Brock Jones version, who's dead, unfortunately. The Two Gun Kid, because I loved it when he was around. And I got to go with Puck from Alpha Flight as the final member, but he is definitely an A-lister. That's my goofy Avenger.
Well, you are playing my tune when you mentioned the Two Gun Kid. I don't know if you've listened to any of the FW Presents superhero drafts we've done, but we did an Avengers draft. And if I could have had one more pick, Two Gun Kid was my guy. He was kind of my alternate. I really wanted to put him on the team, and I just didn't have quite enough time. And again, Korvac Saga, Two Gun Kid plays a small part in that too.
There's one of my all-time favorite sequences in comics is the Two Gun Kid in present.
I know what you're gonna say. I know what you're gonna say. Hang on. Yes, I was gonna say, I'm gonna write it down and then you're gonna say it. Yes, it's classic.
I need to ask Hawk what that noisy contraption used to be as he's pulling his gun out of his holster and flinging it through and shooting backwards and shoots a ringing telephone. These are the things that, I mean, again, your golden age of comics is when you're 12 years old, and I get it. I'm not 12 years old anymore and I have a whole lot of other stuff, but man, I love that stuff. And the idea that Two Gun Kid just hung around because he wanted to, and Hawkeye and him hung out with cowgirls at a ranch, like that was so great. I have listened to both drafts, and when I listen to both drafts, I pick my own team, but I wasn't competing against six other guys, so I picked all the ones I wanted. I'd be like, oh, this would be harder if other people were in it.
Yeah, well, thankfully you always have guys like Shag in there who will just pick a bunch of nonsense people nobody cares about, so you don't have to worry about that. So
as opposed to the ones I just named, like Razorback.
Exactly. I'm, you know what, I'll be honest, I'm still bitter about the comment section from that one, because I think I got like one person who liked my team. I was very bitter. Anyway, well, that is both of those teams I enjoy a lot. All right, fantastic question number two. If you all of a sudden gained the look and the abilities of Beast, we're talking about Avengers Beast, how would you use this in your current everyday life?
Well, this was an easy one, because I teach at an elementary school in a multi-grade classroom. I have both fifth and sixth graders in my class all day long, and I teach all the subjects, so there's no rotations. It's a public school, but it's small, so we're a charter school, a choice school, with an environmental focus and an introductory Spanish to all grades from kindergarten through six. I have to jump around a lot at school. Teaching math to two grades at the same time, for example, would be so much easier if I was as smart as the Beast, but also able to hop around the classroom and hang from the fluorescent lights by my toes. I would use Hank's brains, of course, but also his style and his flair and his genuine sense of fun. I also think it would show the kids that even if you are blue and furry, you can still belong, and that everybody belongs.
That's terrific. I can't think of a better way to use the Beast, to be honest with you. If you had those abilities, that would be terrific. Plus, I always like it when he's sitting like at a chair, leaning back, resting one, his head on one hand, and then he's holding the book by his foot, So see, and again, I hate to mention Shag again, but Shag, it's cute when it's the Beast showing his feet. It's not cute when you're doing it. So I'm just telling you.
Man, I was hoping we could get through the whole episode without Shag's feet.
Anyway, he's going to be so mad at me. I'm just killing him in this episode. Anyway, okay. So, well, I love that. That was great. Your kids would love it too. All the kids at the school would love it. Who wouldn't like that? They'd all want to be, well, can I be in Mr. Beast class? Or not that, not that Mr. Beast. Sorry. But, maybe in the Beast class, everybody would want to be in the Beast class. Absolutely.
And I have to say, my room is decorated with my superhero posters. Because I've been at the same school for 19 years. And when I first started, I was very, very nervous about being that guy. So I had one tiny little like magnetic board that had Superman and Batman on it. And over the years, I've become the comic book teacher guy. So every teacher appreciation week or Christmas, I get mugs with, things. I've gotten some really fun things for my student. Cool.
What kind of posters do you have up?
I
Can
have
you name a couple?
Marvel and DC. I got a Hulk poster. I got a Thor poster. You can buy from different like teaching stores and stuff like that. The inspirational ones that are more cartoony, but it's like be a friend and do all these. So I buy all that stuff. And my wife actually teaches at the same school, and she does themes in her classroom, which is second and third grade, but she does themes related to science. So she does a space theme or whatever. And my students will be like, what's your theme? And I'm like, I don't have a theme. This is my room. This is like, like, I'm not putting that on the wall for you guys. I put that, but I guess now I'm known as the comic book guy. And I guess once you've been there for as long as I have, it's less of a stigma and it's more of my thing.
You know what? And those kids should know what it was like when we were their age. It wasn't that cool to be a comic book reader. It was not, you know, we didn't have all these movies. We didn't, you know, we had to kind of creep around in the darkness a little bit. I was fairly open about that. I was a comic book fan and read comic books and stuff like that. And not a lot of my friends did, but, you know, people for the most part were pretty cool about it. You know, I think it helped that I played sports too, but, but yeah, no, it wasn't like this, you know, it's so widely, I shouldn't say accepted, because do what you want, no matter when it was, but it's just so now so many more people are kind of knowledgeable. A lot of that has to do with the movies and stuff like that. But yeah,
even in my class library, because again, it's fifth and sixth grade. So I have young adult fiction. I have my graphic novel section, and I'm the guy who's like, yeah, you know, you can call them graphic novels if it makes you feel better, but I still call them comics.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's neat to be able to have that stuff there too, because the kids will be reading, and I have text novels of Marvel and DC characters, you know, like, and that stuff. But I also have all the Harry Potter stuff and all the Percy Jackson stuff and all the Warrior series and stuff like that. So it's nice to be able to have that versus the idea of, I always wore it pretty proudly as far as being a comic book fan. And when people were like, that's weird. And I'd be like, let me tell you about why I don't think it's weird. And then eventually they get bored and walk away.
I'll teach them. All right. So listen, here's the mystery fantastic question. To be honest, I was going to answer some nonsense about Wisconsin, but who cares about that? While we were talking before we started recording, you mentioned to me something that you got to see in person that many of us remember as a comic book ad. And can you explain to everybody what that was?
Absolutely. So when I was a kid, I'm the last of five kids, and my parents didn't take family vacations really, but we did when I was the right age. I'd have to look up the year, probably eight. And I was a DC and a Marvel fan. That was another thing too. I was always a DC. People like, which one do you like better? I'm like, I like both. I like peanut butter and jelly. I like both of them.
I was the same. Yeah.
Different. I like Superman and I like Spider-Man. But anyways, so we were on a family trip to Florida, from Wisconsin to Florida. We drove.
And
we went to Disney World before there was an Epcot and all that other stuff. Disney, I would say we're going to Disney World, and there wasn't which park are you going to? And we went to SeaWorld because my parents were like, okay, if we're going to do this, we're going to pay the whatever it was. And we were at SeaWorld when they had the DC superheroes water ski show. I saw the ads and the comics, but I actually was there almost by accident. Mm-hmm. And we sat there and watched it. And I have memories of the show and sitting there thinking, wow, those costumes actually look like the costumes in the comics. Yeah. And these people are jumping around in the water on them. And
I'm sorry to interrupt. Just for those who aren't familiar with it, can you kind of explain a little more exactly is?
So what I remember of the actual show is just like your standard water ski show where they're jumping, they're on ramps and whatever, but it's all of the DC characters. So you have Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, especially Aquaman, but I'm pretty sure Mira was on there, and you have Black Canary. And so you had like deep cut DC superheroes, but there was like a dozen of them, and they would form like the pyramid, which was a thing that was actually, if you Google it, you can find a picture of it. The idea that I just happened to be there on the, you know, it would have been the right months that they were having this show, but the fact there that day, and I'm like, hey, can we see the water ski show? And I just sat there with my mouth open, because this is like my heroes come to life. I mean, we had the Lou Ferrigno TV show for Hulk, so there wasn't a whole lot of stuff. There's a family photo that I don't know if I could find anymore, unfortunately, that was taken by my mom of me standing there looking all excited. And the water skier who is dressed as Robin is behind me, but he's not like coming up for a picture. He's actually like signing something for a kid. So he's like standing behind me. So I'm like, that was my brush with greatness, was Robin photobombed my picture.
That's awesome. That is so great. That beats any mystery question I had for you. So I had to hear that again.
And I take a lot of pictures because I like to document things, and my family gets tired of me taking pictures. But man, if I had the opportunity, I would have taken 100 pictures of that stuff, because it's just, and it's neat to Google and be like, hey, I got to see that. But that one weird picture of Robin standing behind me sideways is my strongest memory from thing. It was
That's
so
so
neat.
great.
It's like we were at SeaWorld and it was going on. We didn't go to SeaWorld for that. My family, they wouldn't have said, let's go because John wants to go see the DC superheroes. They basically said, okay, we'll spend the 45 minutes watching the show because you walked around and did the other stuff.
That's terrific. That's awesome. And none of them were eaten by a shark or Shamu or anything like that. No. Okay, good. That's good to hear. Good. You probably remember that if that happened. All right. Well, that's terrific. I'm so glad. I'm so glad you mentioned that when we were starting, because it's again, that's a terrific story. I love it. So, John, it's closing time now. I can't thank you enough. You're already a veteran. I feel like you're handling this stuff so better than me, basically. You might as well take my place at this point. But I really appreciate you having the show. This has been a lot of fun. And I'm glad you picked Beast. It was such a fun character
It
to
was.
cover. It's always kind of fun, some of the characters people throw out that when they do the show. It's really cool. It's been a very eclectic group of superheroes so far. I know you don't have your own podcast, I understand that, but where can people find you?
Well, I don't have any regular shows like to promote. And it's like you said, it's only the third podcast that I've been a guest on. This has been so fun. It's hard for me to kind of explain to people. My family, I've promoted it to, and my friends and stuff like that. And they're like, you're doing what? And then I'm like talking about comics and they go, oh, because they've experienced that from me. Like, in when the Marvel movies took off, and my brother-in-law says, can you explain something about that? And I'm like, how much time you got? And he's like, and I have the short version. So yeah, I was on DC Special Cast and I was on the JSA Presents, but I'm such a fan of this network. I love both of those experiences, just like I've had an absolute ball doing this. I'm hoping to do more. I just love talking about comics, just like I did back when I was working at the comic shop in Milwaukee, where it was the place where you were surrounded by people with similar interests, and it was just so much. I am active on Facebook under my name, John Stibe. I post comic stuff, but I also post stuff about my family and life. Like I had mentioned, my brother-in-law said once that I use Facebook as a digital photo album of my life. And I think that's accurate. I wish I would have had it back in the DC water skiing days.
If only.
I'm also on Instagram and Blue Sky and Twitter as JJ Carl ST, but that's because I chose that name a long, long time ago when I was on my original, or for my original AOL username. I have two middle names, so that's a mashup of all four of my names put together. So I'm on there too. I really cannot say enough, Brett, how much I have enjoyed listening to the show from the very first episode when I heard about it. And I love the idea. I love the premise with the cocktail and stuff. I really enjoyed my Blue Beast. So thank you for this opportunity.
No, thank you. Thank you. And it was a lot of fun. So thanks again, and we will be right back.
Batman Nightcast is back with new episodes every month.
This time, we're covering the Dark Knight stories we overlooked in previous iterations of this show.
Anyway, I'm Chris Franklin.
And I'm Ryan Daly.
Join us as we find our joy with Batman Comics chronicling the Caped Crusader's first adventures with the Boy Wonder.
Thrill as we review the fiendish plots of a who's who of villains, like Poison Ivy, Killer Croc, Gentleman Ghost, and Clayface 3.
If this is a bit, I don't understand it.
Hey kids, comics by legendary creators Don Newton, Neil Adams, Marshall Rogers, and Bill Sienkiewicz.
Plus, the single greatest Batman story ever told.
It all comes back to Batman Nightcast.
I don't know what's happening right now.
New episodes every month.
Batman Nightcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Wanna make something of it?
Did you fall on your head?
And we're back. Here's the feedback from episode 18 with Dr. Ranch featuring the Legion of Superheroes, 5YL, and a fireball shooter. FW Godfather, host of Fade Out and Fantastic Lounge regular Rob Kelly says, only the team of Brett and Ange could get me to sit through a two-hour podcast about sports in the 5YL Legion. And while I'm still not going to read those Legion comics, unless DC has a new reprint treasury on the schedule, Ange made a case that for that era, that at the very least intrigued me. Maybe if I had read lots of Legion comics, this purposeful zag in another direction would have been of interest to me. While I hardly have much expertise to comment, my favorite Legion of superhero artists would be Steve Lytle. His sleek, glossy look always read futuristic to me, and his facial renderings made them look like actual younger people. His Who's Who entries on various team members were always top-notch. Also loved all of Ange's liquor run adventures. When I worked at a liquor store, every Friday or Saturday, we'd get a group of teens who had just turned of age and would buy booze. They always bought PBR because it was the cheapest and therefore got sloshed as economically as possible. Great listen as always. Thanks, Rob. FW All-Star host of Cheerscast and Fantastic Lounge regular Ryan Daly says, my introduction to Legion was the Mark Waid Barry Kitson run, which I really enjoyed. I explored more of the team's lore and while preparing for various stories on the Secret Origins series and eventually read the Great Darkness saga. The 5YL era is one of the times in the book's history that's a blind spot for me. But I will say, perhaps because I'm not a longtime fan of the Legion with favorites or expectations, I thought the Bendis run was good. Part of me really wants to load my 10-member Legion team with weirdos like Pharaoh Lad, Chlorophyll Kid, Dream Girl, and Arm Falloff Boy. Alas, I'll probably go with Brainiac 5, Triplicate Girl, Bouncing Boy, Ultra Boy, Phantom Girl, Karate Kid, Princess Projecta, Chameleon Boy, Shadow Lass, and Superboy. Yeah, our teams are kind of similar, Ryan. Great episode as always, but Ange forgot to mention Tom Brady's greatest achievement, surviving Nikki Glaser. That was a good roast. Fantastic Lounge newcomer David Ace Gutierrez says, great pairing, guys. I had no idea Lightning Lad was Prody all along. Yes, that does raise some questions, doesn't it? I just started reading the 5YL about last year and fizzled out for some reason, but you've got me wanting to go back. Well, I hope you do go back, David. I mean, it's definitely worth a read, and welcome to the lounge. Thanks for writing in. Bucky 749 says, but there's a fantastic question, and it's a two-parter. Ultra Boy has entered the lounge. He's been watching the old BBC show Only Fools and Horses and wants you to make two of Del Boy's signature drinks, a Caribbean Stallion and a Bacardi and Russian. Can you make them, or will you try them yourself? Now, Caribbean Stallion, I think, is a tequila drink. That I don't think I've ever made before. If I'm correct, Bucky, I think it's a tequila drink, maybe with fruit juices, kind of along the lines of a rum punch. I could be wrong on that, but I think it's a tequila-based drink. I have not tried that. I'd be happy to make one for Ultra Boy, though, providing he has ID. And the Bacardi and Russian, I assume you mean a Bacardi Russian, which would be like a Bacardi version of a white Russian. So you use Bacardi instead of vodka, and I'd be happy to make that as well. Now, my favorite Legionnaire, Bouncy Boy, comes in, and he wants a double burger and fries and a non-alcoholic drink. He has to pick his wife up at the hairdresser. What does he get? For a non-alcoholic drink, you know what I think he's going to get? I think he's going to get what we made today. I think he's going to get a Blue Beast, man. Matches his uniform, too. Super Captain pulls up a stool to say, as near as I can determine, my very first DC comic book was Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes 225 from December of 1976 with a Mike Grell cover depicting Superboy fighting with Wildfire. I know that one. So I have always loved the Legion. Much of the appeal to me is a huge cast of characters, each with their own stories, relationships, and personality traits. It's like the X-Men in that way. I agree. I bought Legion regularly through the 1980s and even subscribed to for a while when the Baxter series began. I respect the work that Giffen and the Beer Bombs did on the 5YL run, but to be honest, it's not the most enjoyable read for me. My personal Legion of Superheroes team of 10 would be Cosmic Boy, Dawnstar, Shrinking Violet, Chameleon Boy, Element Lad, Colossal Boy, Timberwolf, Invisible Kid, Saturn Girl, and Lightning Lad. Great show, guys. Thanks, Super Captain. Another new guest to the lounge, Jason Keane, says, I've always been intimidated by the Legion and all its characters, plus all the reboots. However, hearing the passion in your conversation about this version of Legion has pushed me to finally give it at least some version of it a try. I especially appreciate Brett being so honest about using Dr. Ange's blog to help comprehend what's going on. I've heard the blog mentioned on the network for years, but this is the first time I can recall an actual testimonial about using it. I hope to make use of it myself. Any recommendations on where to start? The only version of the Legion I'm even somewhat familiar with is the group that was around during Final Night. Well, I'm glad I was able to give Dr. Ange's blog some love. It's definitely worth reading. Man, as far as where to start, man, there's so many places to start with the Legion. I would say maybe the Mark Waid run would be a good place to start. Or if you want to go back, man, if you just want to go back to the beginning, even though they're certainly dated by some of the references and stuff, not so much references, but the way they talk and the way the story's read. But I love the beginning. The Adventure Comic series of the Legion was terrific. I it was just so cool, and it was you know, kind of wholesome, but kind of fun, and just different space adventures, and they were an easy read, and I really liked them. Or, you know, start with the start around Superboy 200, which is the marriage of Bouncy Boy and Triplet Girl, and just move forward. Go through all the Grell years, go through all that, go through the Giffen years, go through all that stuff, man. You can basically start anywhere and just have fun, because just enjoy it, you know, and see where it takes you. All right, Edo Bosnar got an outdoor table and says, enjoy the show, even though I am entirely unfamiliar with the 5YL Legion. However, a few things you noted on the rundown of the other Legion eras caught my ear, specifically that period in the late 70s, just before and after Superboy was dropped from the book, which was when I first began reading Legion on more or less a regular basis. First, I have to say that I rather like Staton's art, but totally agree that Ditko was just completely unsuited for Legion. And I'm saying that as a pretty big fan of his art. Also, I share your fondness for that brief period that Ultra Boy, suffering from amnesia, was a space pirate. I love those stories so much that back then, and later I wished more had been made of it. Ideally, I wanted Ultra Boy to split off from the Legion with a few other members, Phantom Girl, Shadow Lass, Shrinking Violet, Chameleon Boy, and maybe also Princess Projector and Timberwolf, as well as Night Girl and Fire Lad from the subs, to form a new team of roving space rangers who were not above using weapons and bending the rules from time to time. That would have been fun if Ultra Boy would be the perfect guy to kind of break off from that. He would definitely be the guy to do that. Fantastilounge regular Ward Hill Terry says, I am now inspired to try that nip of fireball that is sitting on the liquor console. You should, Terry. 'Twas Ange and the 5YL that started me with all of you 11 years ago, backstage during the run of Light Up the Sky at the Lyric Stage Company. I was idly perusing my phone in search of Legion of Superheroes web content. I found the Legion of Superbloggers, and specifically a post by the Good Doctor in which he stated that he was a guest on a podcast, a word I had until then ignored, as the podcast was about Secret Origins, and specifically the issue with the Secret Origin of the Substitute Heroes. I searched for that, listened to it, liked it enough that I searched for other episodes about issues of that book that I enjoyed. Within a year, almost all radio play in my car was replaced by podcast play. Listening to Ryan led me to Rob, Shag, Siskoid, Franklin's, et al. Whereas I appreciate Dr. Ange's enthusiasm and his excellent chronicle of the 5YL book, I shall never read it. Thank you, Ange, for helping me find this fine crowd that built the Fantastilounge, and for your persuasive arguments, but I am still going to pass on it. I found the Legion at about the same time that Ange did, the Kerry Bates / Mike Grell stories, published between issues 210 and 220 of the original Superboy title. I concur that our distinguished mixologist that the stories drawn by James Sherman and inked by Joe Rubenstein have the best artwork. The stories inked by Jack Abel were a crime on poor James Sherman's art. As the precedence has now been set of guests returning to the mic at the Fantastic Lounge, maybe Brett will invite me back to chat some Sherman-drawn Legion. Cheers and long live the Legion. Terry, 100%, man. I will definitely have you back on, and we will talk some. I will talk some Sherman Legion whenever you want. FW All-Star host of DC Special Cast and Fantastilounge regular Paul Kien says, Love this episode, and it was the best name yet for a drink. Five beers later is brilliant. Dr. Ange is always a treat here, and Brett was okay too. I also started buying the Legion in the Grell days, and while I always enjoyed it, it was never my favorite. Peak years for me were the Levitt's Giffen into the Baxter series. But while I thought the 5YL was a great idea, it never grabbed me the way it did for you guys. Which is fine. I actually fell off near the end and missed all the reboots except for an occasional dip in. A few years ago, some of my COVID reading was the Legion Silver Age Omnibus, which I highly enjoyed. In terms of a team, I would go with the original three, plus Brainiac 5, Ultra Boy, Princess Projector, Dream Girl, Element Lab, Invisible Kid, and Shrinking Violet. Thanks, Paul. Nate the Great put a dollar in the jukebox and says, I'll have to reread the 5YL again, but my memory of it was that it was a very different idea that came after the end of the Great Darkness saga, which was kind of my natural endpoint. After all, the whole team had just beat Darkseid. My first Legion was definitely a Grell, but the best stories were the Levitt's Giffen stuff. My lineup, Brainiac 5, Saturn Girl, Wildfire, Shadow Lass, Chameleon Boy, Ultra Boy, Dawnstar, Cosmic Boy, and Phantom Girl. Yeah, maybe a darker Legion Pirate team would work. At the very least, the cover to Legion 275 is a classic. Yes, it is. Big Frank sent me a text that says, hey man, just finished the latest episode, another good one. So many characters and organizations. I've said it before, I simply had no idea there were so many different comic books / superheroes / villains. The Ultra Boy, what's his power? I think that's Ultra Boy, Frank. Anyway, the Persuader, does he try to talk you into doing bad things? And if not, he cuts you in half with his axe? That's, Frank, that's exactly what he does. Yes, he's a very bad influence. This episode's very guest, John Stibe, is still hanging out and says, this was another great episode, Brett and Dr. Ange. I can't believe I almost forgot to comment. I tend to listen to these podcasts while mowing the lawn now or shoveling the driveway, the other 50% of the year in Wisconsin, or when I'm driving. In these cases, I can't stop and comment like I like to. Safety first, friends. Absolutely. Do not comment and drive. I am a huge Legion fan, and the Baxter series is probably my favorite. I worked in a comic shop up in the 90s, and I used the first five issues of that series to get customers to sample the book. It was before DC made a trade paperback of that story called An Eye for an Eye. I love that story because it featured literally everyone. By the time 5YL came along, I was all in. I loved it, even if I didn't always understand, like Brett, what the heck was going on in some panels. To get my customers to try the series, I made my own cheat sheets of the characters' code names and their real names and their home planets. It was like Cliff Notes to have alongside as you read, or, you know, like Wikipedia is now. It sold well as the store I worked at because of this. I even have a letter published in the letter column of issue 16 or 17 thereabouts. Oh, I'll have to check that out. That's awesome. So I'm a Legion fan for life, pre-Baxter, Baxter, 5YL, and all that came after. I scratch my head at some of the reboots and three boots or whatever, but it's still the Legion, and the next time they bring them back, I'll be there for them. My team of 10 would be Timberwolf, Wildfire, Polar Boy, Tellus, Quizlet, Cosmic Boy, Dawnstar, Ultra Boy, Block, Phantom Girl. But that list would change if you asked me again tomorrow, except for Timberwolf, he'd be on my team every time. The appeal of the team is just that. So many characters, so many different combinations of how to use them. I also really love the series entitled Legion, which was L-E-G-I-O-N with the dots in between it. For the first time, for the first several years, that book did such a great job connecting the present day heroes with their predecessors or ancestors, depending on which direction you were going. And Vril Docs was just a character I love to hate. Thanks again. Another fun show and another reason to flip through DC Universe Infinite at all the stuff I need to read or reread, you know, when I get all that free time someday. Long live the Legion. Well, thank you to all who listen. Be sure to subscribe to The Fantastic Four, available on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify. And of course, please leave a 5-star review. I should start reading those 5-star reviews, by the way. I'm going to start doing that. I've been really lax on that. I was going to start doing it, and then I think I read one or two, and then I stopped reading them. I will definitely start reading the 5-star reviews again. Anyway, Fantastic Four is a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. You can find all episodes of Fantastic Four and many other quality shows at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Please leave comments on the website. Let me know what you think of the show. I read all feedback at the end of every episode. Follow us on Facebook at FW Podcast Network, Blue Sky at FW Podcasts, Instagram at Fire and Water Podcast, or use our hashtag online, hashtag FW Podcasts. I can be found on Instagram and Blue Sky at Imaginate Design. Thanks again to John Stibe for hanging out in the Fantastic Lounge. Until next time, the bar is open.